Ryan Dixon and Rory Boylan host Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet.
Here comes Zuccarello. He skates with Vesey. Gets to the Vesey at the near circle. He makes a move on his backhand. Scores! Jimmy Vesey again. It's 3-2 Blue Shirts.
Kadri breaks in. He's in the low. Going to the net. He scores! Nazem Kadri wins it in overtime. 12 seconds in. This game is over.
I enjoy playing against the top players. I enjoy the challenge. And, you know, obviously I'm a pretty competitive person, so I don't want to come on out of the wrong end of that matchup.
Panarin, a right-handed shot. He'll pick it up. He swings wide left. Moving in here on Dubnyk. Here's Panarin. Sneaks. Dubnyk makes a save, and the Wild win another shootout. Back-to-back shootout wins for Minnesota.
Give to Brandon Saad now. Saad, the high slot. Jamie Benn cut off his shooting lane there. Gives it back to Jones. Holt shoots, and he scores! And I got two words for you! Game over!
You know, we played a heck of a game till the last minute. You know, we took a tough penalty. And I think we overplayed that kill a little bit. So it's a disappointing loss.
Welcome to Tape to Tape, T2T. I'm Ryan Dixon. I am a writer with Sportsnet magazine and Sportsnet.ca. Sitting to my left, wondering if he should jump on the Oilers at 10-1 to win the Stanley Cup, it is Sportsnet.ca's senior producer for the NHL, Rory Boylan.
You got to be a real dummy to take that bet, don't you?
You dummies like you, not quite ready to jump all over that. You can... Jump all over the T2T podcast in iTunes, where you can subscribe. Check us out on sportsnet.ca. You can follow Rory on Twitter, at Rory Boylan, myself, at Dixon on Sports. We're going to touch very briefly on the Oilers, because Connor McDavid came through in a big showcase game with Austin Matthews. One in which, of course, neither one of them got a point, but...
And Nazem Kadri was the star?
That's right. Whatever. It was still exciting. We're going to talk about the hot Montreal Canadiens, the somewhat surprising Rangers, a little Minnesota Wild getting the Boudreaux boost, and Dallas. We want you to be a fun, successful team, but we don't know if your goaltending will allow. And the most fun thing we're going to do is make up some trades. We've actually already made them up for the most part. And we're gonna drop them on you and ask each other who says no, maybe.
And then you guys can tell us how crazy we are.
Just how far removed from being NHL GMs we are. But yeah, let's start, I guess, with at the top of the standings with the Montreal Canadiens, yet to lose in regulation. We're recording this on a Wednesday. They have a chance to actually better their start from last year by being a team that hammered them last year to end it, the Vancouver Canucks, that game in Montreal this time. But yeah, I guess it's a case of just nothing has gone wrong yet. The power play has been good when it needs to be and provided some game-winning goals late in games, mm-hmm. and those coming courtesy Shea Weber, typically. I guess the thing with Montreal is I feel like with Carey Price, you know what the floor is. The floor is likely, as long as he's there, you're probably a playoff team that is capable of grinding out a series win, maybe two. I think the real question is, what's the ceiling for Montreal? I mean, are they actually a team you could see in the Stanley Cup final, or do they fall into that second tier of category where... Sure, they can make the playoffs and maybe they can be a tough out, but at the end of the day, you couldn't see them winning three playoff series and going to the final to represent the East.
I don't think I would be able to pick them. And this isn't because I come from a family of Boston Bruins fans or anything.
All right. Sure.
Yeah, sure. That's what I'm going to say. But they haven't convinced me yet. Maybe by the time the playoffs roll around, they would have convinced me, but... I'm not quite there yet. The thing they have going for them, though, is there's not a lot of teams in the East I do like outside of Tampa Bay and probably Pittsburgh. A couple other teams have looked good out of the gates, like the New York Rangers.
Well, wait till I make the Penguins a blockbuster trade and you can really jump on board. Yeah,
there you go. And I might make one for Montreal, too.
All right.
And I think Boston is going to come on. I think Philadelphia is going to come on a little bit. They definitely have gotten off to a slow start because their goalies have been pretty crappy for them so far. But Montreal, I mean, yeah, as long as you have Carey Price, look at the difference he makes with this team.
Human tranquilizer, yeah.
Yeah, they had a franchise best start last year by winning their first 9 games. And if they beat Vancouver Wednesday night, which it's Vancouver, and they're at home, so pretty good odds that they'll do it. They'll actually have a better start this year than they did last year because they'll be 9-0-1 this year and they were 9-1-0 last year. So great start. If they go on, I'm going to go back to this all year, I think. If they keep going on like this and they're a division winner, second place in the division at the end of the season, how the heck does Carey Price not win the Hart Trophy? It's cut and dried, isn't it?
Absolutely.
How can you deny he's the MVP?
Yeah, that team, you take him off that team, and as we saw, it falls further than most teams.
Completely apart.
Yeah.
But, I mean, also going for them, they're, like you mentioned, their power play is much better, and this is something that Shea Weber, it's not necessarily what he was brought in to do, but it was one of the things he's capable of doing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So you add that in. That today's NHL especially, it's such a huge thing to have. If you have a great power play, San Jose had the best power play in the league last year. I can't remember where Pittsburgh ended up, but I think they were up there, and they definitely came on strong, finished strong at the end. So if you have that and you have the great goaltending, then absolutely. And also, guys like Alex Emelin has looked good so far. I don't think that's going to last over the full 82 games. I don't know if you could trade him, but I would maybe be making some calls right now to sell high on him. But, you know, you got Alex Galchenyuk playing center and playing well. He's been on a line with Alex Radulov there on Saturday night. And
he's been a huge difference.
He's been massive, yeah.
I think the difference for them this year is the top six looks way better with Alex Radulov. And even if you want to count Arturi Lehkonen as a top six guy, he's played on one of the first two lines for most of the year.
I do think, too, if Price does go down, that they're better suited this year to deal with it because Montoya is a really good backup.
Yeah, he is.
He's definitely had some down years in his past, but most of the time he's been a solid, reliable backup. I know in Florida he had to step in a number of times and was brilliant, so I wouldn't want to have to ride him for 60 games because Carey Price misses the rest of the season. But if you need him for a week or something like that, or maybe 2 weeks if Carey Price pulls something, then I would feel absolutely comfortable with that. And everything else seems to be clicking better for this team right now. Would I pick them for the cup? Not right now, but they're on that track.
The Rangers seem to be on that track for a while. They made
don't
the final.
It.
And
nope.
No, I'm going back. 2014, I mean, they lost a very close 5-game final with a bunch of overtime games to the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
And got back to the East final again. And then we sort of thought they were receding. You already gave it away. You're not buying a hot start by a little rebuild on the fly, whereby some more speed with Jimmy Vesey up front, Mika Zibanejad getting younger. Not sold.
No, not to be a cup contender. I am not sold to this team. I still think their defense is a bit of a mess. I like Ryan McDonagh. Did you see Ryan McDonagh that?
Yeah, that was pretty unbelievable.
That was, a little troubling, a little...
Does that not alert the concussion spotters?
Yeah,
well,
really.
He just skated face first into the boards.
Yeah.
Let's get him a minute.
Yeah. You have Henrik Lundqvist, right? So you're not out of it. You're always going to be kind of hanging around there as long as you have Henrik Lundqvist. But I just think their defense is still a big problem. They did some things to upgrade their forwards or at least give them a bit of a boost in speed. You're getting what looks to be like the start of this breakout season for Chris Kreider that we've been waiting for a while. And if you get that, then sure, that's a big bump. But I just think they're going to be too slow on that back end. And I think what's going to happen is exactly what happened to them in the playoffs last year. They just got skated out of the building and they couldn't keep up. And like Montreal is a quick team and they added a little bit of size. Pittsburgh's still a quick team. Tampa Bay certainly a quick team. You know, there's too much speed around them. I just think they're still built for a different era. They're trying to adapt, but it's not quite there yet. And I'm just not sold on the New York Rangers. I don't think you can win when you have Dan Girardi and Mark Stahl playing so many minutes for you still. I can't buy into this team. They've had their best years. They had their runs at the Cup.
You still think if the window has closed.
Yeah, well, not that I think they're going to miss the playoffs necessarily, because I think that something that was working against them was the New York Islanders were looking like a team on the rise, and they lost too much this summer, and now they're kind of middling, maybe sliding, backsliding a little bit. But I think, like I mentioned, Philadelphia's gotten off to a terrible start, but I could see them coming back and finishing better than the Rangers. The Washington Capitals, I for sure would pick better than the Rangers. The Pittsburgh Penguins, I would have over the Rangers. Now they're in fourth place in this division, and they're right on that playoff bubble. So I have a hard time buying in.
Plus 18 for the Rangers. Best goal differential in the league. Still not
early
enough to get Rory on board. One guy that's pretty easy to get on board with when he starts to coach your team is Bruce Boudreau. I mean, we're seeing it again with the Minnesota Wild. Off to a decent start, but scoring more, you know? I mean, Minnesota's always kind of been, in our minds, New Jersey East, I think, whether that's a fair characterization. I'm not, obviously, largely because Jacques Lemaire laid that defensive foundation there, and for so many years, they're always at least a very competitive team because of the way they played in all areas of the rink. But yeah, the Boudreau bounce, it seems to be a real thing.
It's happening. It's absolutely happening. We talked about this a little bit in our preview show too, that this is something that happens everywhere he goes or has gone in the past. That team's gotten a bump.
Pencil them in for the division win.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go that far. I don't think you are either. And then when he leaves, the team that he leaves generally takes a bit of a dip. Anaheim's 4-4-2 right now. I, in our preview show, picked them to miss the playoffs, and I still feel pretty okay with that. Not backing away from that. I'm backing away from my Calgary prediction, but we can
give Brian Elliott a little more time.
Yeah, but Minnesota, this is impressive what they're doing so far. It made me think, so our analytics writer at Sportsnet.ca, one of them, Andrew Berkshire, had sent out a tweet, and I think it is an interesting question to pose when we're talking about Bruce Boudreau's impact on the Minnesota Wild. If you're hiring a coach and a GM, and one of them can be absolutely elite, one of or the best at his position, but the other one had to be plainly average, which one are you taking as the all-star?
All-star GM, average coach every day.
And I would lean that way too, but Bruce Boudreau is showing us what a great coach could do to it. I would argue even Mike Babcock is starting to show what a good coach can do. You know, when you give him, he's got way farther behind to make up. But you're seeing the impact that legit coaches can have on these teams. So I think it's an interesting question. But
a bad GM can set you back 15 years. You know, that's the thing.
What's happening right now with the Vancouver Canucks?
Sure,
that's what happens with a bad GM. Sorry to say, but that's what it is, right? So, but you can live with, I think, an average general manager still.
So someone who doesn't make catastrophic errors, as long as they're just
okay. I guess maybe he's poor, but if you had Mike Babcock staying on as the, if he was the coach of the Maple Leafs and Dave Nonis stayed on as the GM,
sure.
I
don't know. I still think to some degree, I probably always underestimate the impact coaches can have because it is tough to quantify, but I just inevitably think you are hamstrung by what you have. Like, I guess if you know, just for the sake of argument, if you could rank old teams just based purely on how much talent they have, if you took the 15th team, assuming that represents like the dead average GM, and then took the absolute best coach, I guess that could really move the needle. But I still think, like, to some degree, it goes back to the old, are you telling me I couldn't coach the late 70s Canadians to one cup? Maybe Scotty gets them four, but couldn't I get them one?
Yeah, what instantly clinched it to the GM side for me was pretty simple. A good GM is going to go out and get you a really good goalie, and then your coach is good.
Sure.
Right?
Then you're Devin Ted Nolan.
Dubnyk, Devin Dubnyk's having a great start here for the Minnesota Wild, too. So as much as Boudreau is changing the way, and I think he is changing the way the team is playing, and that's why they're scoring more goals, but he's got a heck of a goalie act going on behind him. And again, I still don't buy Devin Dubnyk as a very great goalie. No, I don't. I mean, he had good numbers last year, I guess. 918 save percentage.
And outrageous numbers the year he got there.
A lot of games. He played a lot of games, which not a lot of guys do anymore. How many goalies make it to 67 games in a season anymore? Not that many. He's just had those bad years, and I can't get past him. It took me a while to get over it with Marc-Andre Fleury, so maybe one day I'll get over it with Devin Dubnyk.
Yeah, he really has. I mean, since he's gone to Minnie, the save percentage never dipped down below 918. So.
Yeah, and again, this is a different style that they're playing now. I wonder if, I mean, but he's off to a great start. So, I don't know, let's come back to this in a month or so and see how he's doing.
Eric Staal off to a pretty good start. I mean, I think it's fair to say some people kind of left him for dead.
Great buy low candidate in the summer, right?
Loved that. I think, I don't know if we did, but let's just say we rated that as a good value contract.
Yeah, we absolutely
sounds
did.
Like something we would have said.
Yep. It's exactly like why Alexander Radulov was a great contract.
Absolutely.
Except he costs less, so... I mean, why not? Why not try and see what happens? You're not paying too much. You're not holding yourself hostage or anything up against the cap. It's 1 year or two, isn't it? And then is it two?
Yeah. No, I think he's three.
Is he three?
I do think, but it's low. We'll get our crack staff, meaning me on the laptop, on that. But yeah, I think it's three, but it's not, not too high. It's very palatable.
Right. So Minnesota Wild, I like them a lot, and that's a tough division, though, man. I mean, who are you kicking out of the playoffs? I don't think I had Minnesota in when we were doing our preseason show. Who are you kicking out? Is it Nashville at this point?
3 years, 3.5 for Saul, producer Emil says. But yeah, you know
3.5, that's good.
You know what's funny? Looking at the West, I don't think I thought about this enough before the season or realized like it's kind of wide open. So like there's just, you know, the Anaheims and LAs that you just absolutely penciled in previously are just on shakier ground all of a sudden. And then a team like Nashville, who everyone, you know, thought could go to the West final, maybe they still do, but they started so poorly that they've already dug themselves a little bit of a hole and made that interesting. Like the door is just a little more open in the West. If, you know, okay, is Chicago going to miss? No. Is St. Louis going to miss? Is San Jose going to miss? No. But after those three teams, is there anyone you'd bet your life on? Like, are you going to bet your life?
I would bet that, five teams are coming out of that central division, though. I think it's significantly better. I mean, I still think you're definitely going to have Vancouver and Arizona out of the playoffs. There's no chance.
Sure.
I don't think those two teams make it. And I had Anaheim out. So you're down to Calgary and Edmonton. LA's off to a terrible start, and they're going to be without Jonathan Quick for a while. I just think the central teams... I mean, top to bottom, even Colorado's got off to a good start. That's a team I had picked to finish seventh there, but they're looking not too bad under their new coach, too. So it absolutely is wide open. I'm just looking at Minnesota's numbers, actually. Their Corsi rating is the fourth worst in the league right now, worst in the Western Conference behind Vancouver.
Right?
Yeah. So, again, when Dubnyk eventually comes back to earth and he doesn't keep posting a .948 save percentage, that maybe that catches up to them a little bit. But it's wide open. I mean, has your opinion changed on Edmonton at all? Are they?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
A little bit. I mean, Cam Talbot's been good too.
Yeah.
McDavid for a full year. Larson adds something, even if you don't think he's worth what Taylor Hall should return. It still helps the blue line a lot. I'm not ready to go out there and get crazy, but. I think it's a different Oiler team? Are they in fold like cheap suit territory? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either. I think they'll be in it later than they've ever been in it. Well, ever. Later than they've been in it any time recently.
Recently.
But if last year taught us anything, it's to not overreact to these slow starts too quickly. Because remember, Anaheim and Pittsburgh got off to awful starts.
Yeah, but Pittsburgh had to change its coach. And,
Sure.
You know who is keeping things very interesting in the West by letting in a lot of goals? Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen.
God.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
What
do you do? Because in the beginning, it seemed like, between the two, they should be all right, but it just hasn't worked in Dallas. And now, you know, you're looking at this team with all this enviable talent at the top. And, you know, even just looking at the line this year, you could certainly nitpick, but I mean, I love the Spezza trade at the time, him going there as a number two. Jim Neal did such good work right off hop with this team.
Yep.
But yeah, it seems like they're going to be hamstrung by their inability to keep the puck out of their own net.
Yeah, and you don't want to do too much with this team because it's of what it did last year. You saw what it's capable of, and if you can find a good goalie to put behind it, then they could suddenly become a powerhouse in the NHL. But, I mean, Kari Lehtinen is $5.9 million against the cap, and Antti Niemi is $4.5 million against the cap. Obviously, I don't see how you... Do you have to protect a goalie in the expansion draft? Because I wouldn't want to protect either of those guys, right? So you're hoping that Las Vegas takes one of them, and maybe they do, because they're going to need to get to the floor, right? So this maybe helps, depending on who else is available out there. Some goalies who might be available, like a Ben Bishop, are UFAs, and I know Vegas has a window where they can talk to these guys. But you know, if you can't come to a deal, which I'm betting Ben Bishop would want to test that market before signing anything, then this is an opportunity. But that's a year away. What are you going to do? You can't, I don't think, trade any of these guys, Lehtinen or Niemi, for anything.
Anything, yeah. Like
no one's going to want to take them
because of the first round pick.
You're
going
to have to eat most of that cap hit for whoever you're going to trade away, and then you're left with a different problem because you're going to be paying a whole bunch of money to somebody who's not even playing for your team. Which goalie are you getting? Who's available? Is Yaroslav Halak the guy? Because he's still making a good amount of money. And
yeah,
you know, he's signed through next year. He's the only one of those Islanders goalies who does have a contract. But yeah, you're in the same situation where you're getting a goalie who's making too much. How are you going to navigate the salary cap there? But it's a good team, but that's a mess in goal, and you're right. When they've got them, it looked like this can work. Yeah. One of them is going to find it.
Between the two, you're going to get 9-15.
Yeah.
And maybe Jim Nill was like, you know what? We didn't always have world-beating goaltending in Detroit, but we had great teams, and it was enough to get by. And just kind of blew up in his face.
Now they're 32, 33 years old.
Yeah, sure.
So, and the team is not a defense-first club.
No, that's right. Their allure to us and what they trade on is the ability to get up ice and bury. And that's going to leave you open on the back end a bit.
Exactly. And so when you're leaving it open on the back end, your goalies are not very good. But I trust Jim Nill. He has done such a good job there. And his track record coming from Detroit is so great that you have to believe he's obviously recognized this and he's trying to do what he can. And I think at some point he's going to do something. We're going to sit back and go, whoa, I can't believe he was able to pull that off.
Speaking of contracts, it's actually time to start thinking about what will certainly be the biggest deal in the NHL when it is signed, presumably 1 second after
John Tavares with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah.
Oh, no?
Connor McDavid time! He is now getting through the second year of his three-year entry-level deal. He can sign an extension this summer. So we all know he could just kind of walk in there and go, hello, I would like 20%, and I'll take a cherry Danish to go, you know?
Yep.
Do you see that happening, or do you think because there's kind of a precedent out there a little bit with guys, you know, taking a little more of a palatable number? I mean, I don't think anyone doubts for 1 second that Connor McDavid would love to be part of a winning team in Edmonton as soon as possible. And one of the things that would help Edmonton achieve that is some room under the cap. So do you think it's likelier that he ends up with the first full-blown 20% deal, or do you think it's something that lands a couple million under that? 20% of 73 million, so roughly is like 14.5. Do you think he comes in with a hit a lot closer to like the 10.5 Taves Kane mark?
My ceiling for him, I think, is $12 million. I think that makes him the highest paid player against the cap in the league. He can sign the 8-year deal with that, take him to UFA, and it concedes something to the team to try and use what's left to build the team. Because, you've seen guys like Nikita Kucherov take a little bit less, Steven Stamkos take a little bit less, Hampus Lindholm recently took a little bit less to help their teams out a little bit. Well, now, Connor McDavid is different.
Yeah, but even when Sidney Crosby signed his current extension, I feel like he could have gone much further
for sure
than
that. How is Sidney Crosby not the highest paid player in the league, right? I mean, John Tavares' contract is ridiculous.
It is
the best contract in the league right now, probably. So I think Connor McDavid will pass the $10.5 million that Kane and Taze are making, but boy, to be the first guy to get that 20% when you don't even have the UFA status to dangle.
Yeah,
you know, you're under control of that team. So $12 million to me is the cap, is what his cap number is going to be, as high as it could go, and that's twice as much as the next Edmonton Oiler would be making. And I think you're still going to be having to face issues if you're the Edmonton Oilers. You can't be paying Ryan Nugent-Hopkins $6 million.
I was looking at that lineup today when we were doing our fake trades in advance of this pod, and I had
him too.
There's got to be somewhere for the news, because I just feel like the writing's on the wall there.
You know, it was hard when I was trying to come up, but I came up with one for Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and I sat and I thought, and like, it would be hard giving up a guy with this much potential for this, but it's almost going to get to the point if you let it go on for too long, and now you've signed Connor McDavid for $12 million, where you're selling him for less just to get rid of that cap.
Right.
He's not. You're not selling him as a number one overall pick, a top six centerman anymore. You're just selling him for whatever you can get. Whatever, need a defenseman, you need an Adam Larson type. Oh, go and get an Adam Larson type. So I think that the time to sell high, if it hasn't already gone past, which it may have, it's running
it's
low.
Quickly it's, approaching.
He has been off to a very bad start there too. He's on the third line.
Yeah.
You know, it's not working out. You got
to interesting get ahead to see of that. Where it goes from here. Well, the $12 million man, or soon to be maybe, Connor McDavid was in Toronto to play the Leafs, and their savior, Austin Matthews, didn't exactly work out to be the toe-to-toe slugfest we were hoping for. But just cool to see the vibe around that game, I think. You know, the legends on hand, Wayne Gretzky, Bobby Orr were there. And just cool from the point of view of living here to see that excitement. And like, the Leafs got a dog in this fight now. Like, we're talking about the elite up and coming, you know, overall studs in the league, and the Leafs can submit a name and say, how about this guy who plays for us? Cause he might not be there yet, but man, he's getting close, or he will be soon.
Everything is going so well for Toronto right now. And I thought Morgan Rielly was going to have a huge year, and he's been off to a so-so start.
Yeah.
And I think he'll find it, and that's going to add so much more. But you're having guys, obviously you're getting the production from the new guys, the Austin Matthews's, the William Nylanders. But I still think you need the guys, and we were talking about James Van Riemsdyk off air again about fake trade ideas and stuff like that. He's a guy I love, and I would be very hard-pressed to give him up, because I think if you put him with a legit number one center, that he's a guy who could approach 40 goals. I think he's that good. Like, he's a really good goal scoring power forward type. He just hasn't had anybody play. And he's not the same. He's not the goal scorer in the same sense that Phil Kessel was, but he's the same in the sense that he hasn't had anybody to play with yet.
He's deadly from in tight.
Yeah. So you give him somebody, and I think that's coming. And I also think if you trade Van Riemsdyk, you're probably doing it for a defenseman, right?
Absolutely.
James Van Riemsdyk is going to be up for UFA status after next season, I think, if I remember. Maybe it's the season after that. But I think he's a guy where at the time his contract runs out, this team should be starting to show some, I mean, it's already showing progress, but it should be getting pretty close to making the playoffs if it hasn't already. And he's the guy you might be able to turn to and say, hey, take a little bit less, and we're going to have a cup contender here in short order. He's making 4.25 or 4.75 or something like that.
Oh, he's on
that,
a great
you know?
Deal, yeah.
Yeah, so I think you can get him for a little bit more than that, obviously, because he'll be UFA eligible, but I think you could probably get him for a good deal. And you still need, as great as the young guys are playing, you still need the guys who have been in the league for a few years to get minutes, to score you some points. They're very important to what the Leafs are doing here. And I think you're seeing some growth at Nazem Kadri this year, too.
Well, yeah.
But he's the guy I would trade if I'm trading one of those guys.
You know what? We'll save this for a future pod. But, Nazem Kadri and JVR are definitely the will-they-won't-they guys with the Leafs.
For sure.
They're young enough and good enough.
100%.
And, you know, they're different levels. But if you could see the world where they stay, you could see the world where they go.
Yeah, and if you trade Van Riemsdyk, don't forget, and you trade him for a defenseman, whoever you get back, you can say, we turn Luke Shen into this guy.
There you go. Well, we're about to turn some guys into other guys by pretending we have the power to be GMs. When Tape to Tape comes back, we're going to roll out some
some fake trades. There hasn't been enough action on that front in the NHL yet. We get a little impatient. We took matters into our own hands. So yeah, Rory and I are going to drop some this for that on you on the next segment of Tape to Tape. Tape to Tape. Time to get our armchair GM on and come up with some kind of sort of realistic, but not entirely realistic trades. I.e., you know, we did take into consideration things like the salary cap.
Yep.
And, you know, a player situation and team needs and what a team is looking for. You know, what's out there in terms of, you know, guys like Jacob Trouba. Spoiler alert, we know what Winnipeg has in mind for what it would like to see in return for Trouba. So, yeah, we've done our best here to come up with some scenarios, some trade scenarios that could work on either end. I know you've got a few on your list. Do you want to drop? Did you settle on one that you want to drop?
I feel more comfortable with one than the others. And I'm bringing this to you because you're a hockey expert, but the Montreal Canadiens are your baby.
Near and dear.
So I'm going to get the Montreal Canadiens involved here. And I'm starting with the Anaheim Ducks. Now, looking at the Ducks, they could use a forward, and they have tons of defense. So I'm looking to trade a defense for the Anaheim Ducks. Right up against the cap, going to have those issues. So I'm trying to get rid of some salary. And Cam Fowler is going to be UFA after next season. And with the cap hits or the cap problems that they have, that's going to be a problem to re-sign him. He's making $4 million right now, so what do I do? I'm looking to the Montreal Canadiens, who have an improved power play, an improved defense in that regard so far, but they could still use some more foot speed. They could use a little bit more passing ability. They could give their power play a little bit more of a boost. So I'm trading Cam Fowler from the Anaheim Ducks to the Montreal Canadiens. And I know Anaheim needs a forward back, but that was really hard to do. So I'm starting with a defenseman, actually. I'm giving Nathan Beaulieu back to Anaheim and draft prospect Sherback, 26th overall pick. What's his first name?
Nikita.
Yeah, there it is. It slipped my mind. 26th overall pick in 2014. I know you like him, but it gives them something. And they have Richie in their system, on their team right now, and he's getting his NHL career off to a start. So it gives them something for the future, and I just think you have guys like Shea Theodore who can step into that Anaheim blue line and kind of fill in. Beaulieu would absolutely fill in. It looks like he's ready to take off a little bit, so it saves them some cap, gives them a nice forward to look forward to in the future. I don't know how I feel about it, but I have a couple other ideas, but I think that was perhaps the best one.
I think that one, I will out myself as a prospect overrater to the bone. I always think guys are going to end up being more impactful at the NHL level than often they do. So yes, as of right now, I'd probably be a little hesitant on Sherback, but I think if you pulled more objective people, you might get a different answer. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think there's the bones of something there, because if you're Anaheim, I mean, unless Anaheim wants a forward who can step in tomorrow, because Sherback is not that.
Yeah.
Maybe then they say, how about this youngster, Arturi Lehkonen, who has, you know, the Canadiens, you could argue, might be creating another problem for themselves. But they kind of have guys in, you know, they could bring up a Daniel Carr and move people up in the lineup to fill Lehkonen's spot. So maybe something there. But yeah, the Beaulieu Fowler part makes sense, because the Canadiens are getting the more established player, you know, the probably long-term still the better player, but Anaheim's getting a guy who right now is pretty good and still could have a lot of room to grow, and he's cheaper. So
right.
It is something that I think makes sense, and Anaheim doesn't have to go, oh man, we're giving up so much on the back end. It's like, well, you're getting a guy who could probably come be 70% of what Fowler is already,
yep.
And maybe close that gap a little bit in the next year or two.
Yeah, and I think especially you want to get out in front of that if you're Anaheim. If you're going to have a problem with that contract after next season, and you don't want to have to trade him when he's in that last year of his contract, because his value just tanks, right? You don't want to have to give up. You're not going to give up too much just to get him for one season or part of a season. So if you can do it now, then the team that's getting him gets a year, year and a half out of him, and they're going to give up more for him.
What are your other Fowler scenarios, quick?
Oh, man. Okay, so... Oh, God.
Which
so,
apparently Anaheim isn't trading him on a side note, but whatever. Yeah. That's why we threw the word fake said, here.
But that means they're trading him, right?
Yeah, hopefully.
I'm trying to make sense of it. This is who I would trade if I was in their situation. The next one that I looked at was Edmonton, and we're talking about Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. So this
tough
is a tough
salary-wise, right?
This and is a tough one salary-wise.
We did consider that, folks, I swear to God, just not down to the penny. But yeah, Anaheim would be taking on salary, so they'd have to find a way to, like, dump Jonathan Bernier or something.
Yeah, so that's the only thing there. I tried, how do I get Ryan Nugent-Hopkins over to Anaheim? Because I think that would actually be a decent fit.
Absolutely.
And if you're giving Fowler back, that's exactly the kind of thing
Cogliano found himself in Anaheim, so can RNH.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, while they got Larson in the offseason, he's that shutdown physical guy. They don't have enough of the fast skating,
smooth
puck moving,
silk.
Exactly, guys. So I think Fowler would be a great fit there. Nugent-Hopkins just makes too much for Edmonton right now. He is locked up, so you're going to have control of him for a number of years if you can get him, and he'll be able to slide in on that, I think, second line center, because Ryan Kessler is just, he's done.
Yeah,
he doesn't have it anymore, right?
That contract, you knew the day they signed it was not good, and it is not looking any better.
That's a problem, yeah. I know the knock on Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is that he's just not physical enough. He's not strong enough on the puck all the time.
Good news. That's the way hockey's going, though.
Yeah,
you know?
You have that in Ryan Getzlaf. So if you can add a little bit of Ryan Nugent-Hopkins behind him in that second line, I think that's a nice compliment. So what do you have to do to make that fit? I think you could. It's what, $2 million difference between them. So I think you'd have to do a little cap manipulation there. But that's what I started with, a Cam Fowler, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins.
You have to think
trade.
Edmonton would eat a little on there.
Yeah, so maybe they eat some salary. Maybe you add in a smaller cap hit here or there and a draft pick or something like that.
Yeah.
But I think if you start with that, you can maybe work your way towards something. They're division rivals, though. So.
They are. It's true. Well, yeah, I didn't even consider this, but my blockbuster even is all the more possible because it is a trade across conferences, which I know GMs like to do. I was trying to find ways to solve this Jacob Trouba impasse for the player and the GM. And what I came up with was Trouba and Connor Hellebuyck to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
But they don't have a goalie.
For Marc-Andre Fleury.
Oh.
For Marc-Andre Fleury, Olli Maatta, and Derek Pouliot. So,
okay.
First off, let me just say, salary-wise, it works out pretty well because Winnipeg would have to shed a little, but basically to bring in Fleury and Maatta, you're looking at about 9, and Pittsburgh's getting that relief, obviously, so then they can go sign Trouba. So Winnipeg would have to do a little bit, but it's not unthinkable that they could clear the space to make that happen. And then Pouliot for Hellebuyck is a wash. So, yeah, I mean, essentially, from the Pittsburgh side, I think you're thinking Trouba could be a right shot stud. I mean, people really like him. And
Matt has had injury problems.
And Matt has had some injury problems, absolutely. Yeah. So we know Winnipeg wants a left-shot defenseman back. I don't think you're going to get... I mean, the Trouba for Ristolainen and the Trouba for Morgan Riley, like, it wasn't... That was just never going to fly. But you get this guy who I still think Pittsburgh would be kind of loath to give up because, as you mentioned, we haven't sort of seen his full potential, but you got to give up something to get something. And Winnipeg can then slot him in their top four on the left side. Pouliot has been... You know, he's a high draft pick, has offensive upside, but has never really been able to put it together just yet at the NHL level. Got hurt early on this year. And if you're Winnipeg, you've had these goaltending questions for so long. I mean, I know Fleury isn't in the Price Lundqvist range, but he is a goalie with very good numbers. Not many goalies are. You've still got Eric Comrie in your system, so giving up Hellebuck doesn't hurt that much. And if you're Pittsburgh, you get to hedge a little at least against Matt Murray, who still isn't that tested. Sure. I mean, he's had a, you know, obviously had a great spring and won the Stanley Cup, but you now bring in another guy who could well be a great goalie in his own right. And then if you need to make a move down the road, you can address that. So I think Pittsburgh's doing it because they think Trouba is the best player out of all those players, and he's a right shot defenseman. And Winnipeg's doing it because it brings some more stability to what's been a tough goaltending situation, and they still get a potentially high-end left-shot defenseman and a wild card in Puglia.
That's such a great go. I mean, you're giving up, and you're not really taking a massive risk, but you're obviously you're not taking a risk because Trouba doesn't even want to play for you anymore.
Yeah.
But that's such a go-for-it trade because you're locking up your goaltending. It's solved. That's the only thing left really to solve with this team is, what are they going to do with their goaltending? Everything else looks really solid for now and the future. What are they going to do with their goaltending? Are any of the guys they have the guy who can take them there? Fleury, he's got 2 years left on his contract after this, too. So you're going to be going for it for a couple years. You're going to be, Patrick Laine is going to be through his entry-level deal by the time Fleury comes up. So sure, you're going to be making a push for that for a while. So I think that's interesting. I wonder what, so Olli Mäta is signed for $4 million, a little bit more than $4 million right now.
Long-term.
Long-term. 5 more years after this. What kind of contract are you looking at for Jacob Trouba? Who has the leverage here? Because if he doesn't play a game by December 1st, he can't play this year.
Yeah.
So at what point does he have to give? I think, and then, of course, if a trade like this happens, he goes to Pittsburgh. I don't imagine he's going to want to give them the gears too much on a new contract, right? So can you get him for $4 million? Can you get him for a little less than that?
Trouba?
Yeah.
No.
So that's,
no way. I think he's at least 5.
So you're stepping up, you're paying a little bit more for that defenseman to play behind Letang.
Yeah.
If you're Pittsburgh.
So
I don't know. I like it. The only thing I guess is, you're paying a little bit more for that defenseman, and your goaltending, while Matt Murray won you a cup last year, it's a little less certain with Fleury out of there and Hellebuck coming in. It could be a home run.
It depends on
what do you do. Are you still going for that Stanley Cup? Because don't forget, now I'm just thinking about this now too. What do you do at the expansion draft? Who do you protect? Which goalie do you protect?
Sure, that's
That just came to me right now. So that might be. Yeah, if I'm Pittsburgh, I still want to go for that Stanley Cup, and that's a tough one, man.
It also comes down to how much better do you think Trouba will be than Mäta? Like 5 years from now, are they like clearly different levels, or
I'm not convinced they are.
And that's
Trouba's been up and down already. Like Mata's had his injury concerns, but that's, I mean, Trouba, he might get through it. He's 22. Like, I don't think it's anything that's career ending yet or anything like that. But Trouba has definitely had up and down seasons already. And the down seasons he's not a number two defenseman when he's having a down season. Olli Mäta, he might end up being the better defender.
But the high end on Trouba,
very high,
keeps you drooling.
For sure.
Like, I remember his rookie year, I remember people were all over, and I think he only played 65 games. But yeah, even his points per game that year was pretty impressive for a rookie, and I just remember the rumblings being like, he's going to be good. And then you're right, it obviously hasn't gone exactly that way in the most recent two seasons. Otherwise, Winnipeg probably would have been like, all right, what do you want, kid?
Sure, and Mäta, his rookie season too was pretty great. So I'm not convinced that he's not going to be, you know, hit a Trouba-like potential at some point. You know, 22 years old, 29 points, 9 goals that year. I don't know if the difference there is going to be enough for me to.
So you think maybe Pittsburgh is the one that would ultimately nick?
I think so. Yeah, because Your goaltending situation is more uncertain, but you're in the same spot where you have to choose who to protect around expansion. And I'm not convinced that the difference between those two defensemen is enough to make up for it. It might be. And then you also have the contract. Obviously, you have to get that done before you make the trade. You want to know that you can sign them, obviously. That goes without saying. And if you're going to be paying them more, I don't know. I think we talked about this on the last podcast when I was talking about if I was Tampa, I would be looking to move a Drouin just because I don't want one of those guys on my team. Who's to say that he's not going to give me a hard time
Segue. Another one I came up with kind of on the fly after that one was Drouin and Jason Garrison from Tampa to St. Louis for Shattenkirk and a second. And at first blush, I guess you think Drouin might be a lot to give up for a guy who is a UFA. But number one, they have offense to spare. Number two, they could win the Stanley Cup this year legitimately and need an upgrade on the back end. And number three, the GM in Tampa seems to have proven himself a competent fella. And Tampa came through last week and I was talking to Brian Boyle a bit and he's like, you don't even want to know how good we have it here. Like, it's just fantastic. It's a great team. It's a good spot to play. It's a zero tax state. You know, I think there's a decent chance if Tampa could make it work, that Shattenkirk would go and say, I think I'm going to stick around here. So with factoring in that a little bit, I think maybe that's one you could get done. And for St. Louis, you've still got a top three of Petrangelo, Bomisir, Parayko. You add Drouin to an already improving and quicker mix up front.
He's the kind of guy they've been making this team out of recently.
Yeah,
getting
absolutely.
Rid of the Backuses and the
Browers.
Bringing
in the Yakupovs and giving the Fabries a chance.
Exactly. So it goes with that. I wonder if instead of sending a pick back to Tampa, you send somebody like a Ty Ratty who you're probably bumping somebody like that out of a job if you bring in a Drouin. His ceiling is, there's nowhere for him to move up in that depth chart anymore because you're really filling it out quickly here with better players. So I wonder if you can kind of offset that back a bit by sending Ratty or somebody. I don't know if you'd want to go as far. Probably wouldn't want to go as far as Robbie Fabry.
No way.
But a Ty Ratty, you know, he was a second round pick, but he's had couple pretty good years in the AHL, 42 points in 59 games, 46 in 62, so he's shown some potential. He had 6 points in 13 games with the Blues last year, so, you know, 23-year-old, maybe you put him in Tampa, you put him with some really great players there, and he can find himself. So maybe, yeah, I like that. I might go after a guy like Ratty instead of that pick going back, so they at least get a player they can insert into their lineup. But, I mean, Drouin going to St. Louis makes a lot of sense. And we were talking last week, I think, about what do you do when your window to win a Stanley Cup is open? How hard do you go for it? Well, if you're going out and you're trading a young stud like Drouin.
Well, both those teams are going for it,
You're absolutely going for it. It's exactly what Tampa Bay could use.
Absolutely.
Too.
And St. Louis has a surplus, right?
Yeah, Garrison's kind of run his course. He's good for what he is, but he's not fast anymore. He's still got a great shot, so he's not going to be, you know, he's not going to be a problem.
Complete dead weight.
He's
surrounded
by so much there.
Yeah.
And Drouin is obviously the big ticket for St. Louis there. But, I mean, adding Shattenkirk to that Tampa Bay, is just another huge boost for
them.
He'd be a second pair on them, right? Because you have Stroman and Hedman on that.
Well, yeah, that's what he is in St. Louis too, right? But, yeah, absolutely. This was pretty fun, wasn't it?
It was. We should do it again sometime.
I think we will do it again sometime. Fake trades, I tell you. Just getting on that internet and crunching numbers, almost like you live in the dream.
I have to go home and start messaging my fantasy hockey league to see who needs to make a trade because I got the trade
fresh.
Bug now.
You're right.
I got a trade bug.
All right.
Here's more cowbell.
You can always use more cowbell on this podcast and every podcast. That is it for Tape to Tape this time out. Don't forget you can subscribe on iTunes. Check us out on sportsnet.ca. That's all we got for you this week, but tune in next time for more glass rattling hockey action and fake trades on Tape to Tape. Well, it's a do to say about it. They say it's blue, but I have to doubt it. And then they tell you everything about it.
This has been Tape to Tape, the hockey podcast by Sportsnet. Some people say